Delta 7 Japan Mobile.
ND7J, W4DJW. Morning, Bob.
How are you doing? And happy New Year.
I'm doing good. I was thinking about you the other day when I was thinking about retiring and going into a different line of work after I retire. I didn't hear a lot of that. If you're mobile, you probably went in the shadow.
Yeah, I said I seem to have that down pat. That's going into a new line of work after retirement.
Have you ever entertained the idea of site survey and aerial photography, taking, you know, like a construction site that's going to be there for 9 to 24 months or something like that, and they want to see time-lapse photography, and you fly over it every day and take and then stitch a big panorama together, and then at the end of the project you present a time-lapse photography view of the build? You ever thought about anything like that?
I have not even remotely considered anything to do with photography. You know what I'm saying? 40-plus years has pretty much, I've had enough of the camera, so to speak.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something I was looking at. I mean, that would combine three things that I like to do. I was thinking about when I retire, because it's not too far away. I become eligible at the end of this month, January, February the 1st, and then my normal retirement is like 18 months after that or something like that, November of 2022. So I was thinking about, I like flying, I like computers, and I like photography. I've always done photography, and I could make money at it if I combined those three and did site surveys. So I got to looking into it. There's a lot of people out there trying to make money with drones, and they said about the only way to do it and make money off of it is to go into commercial, and that's commercial, right, when you're surveying their site. And you just set it up to take pictures every day, and it takes hundreds of them, surveying the site, and you don't even have to be there when it does it. But then you assemble it on a computer later, and those guys charge anywhere from $200 to $300 an hour to do that kind of work. So I thought that'd be interesting. Just all you got to do is set it up and, you know, check on it every now and then.
I am all for somebody being able to make a living at doing something that they like. You know, I've done photography for so long. But in my photography history, career, whatever you want to call it, I have done time-lapse. In fact, I did a time-lapse at a factory that made engine blocks for these three-wheeled Can-Am machines. I was at the factory that built the engines, and I did time-lapse photography through the whole plant from up above where they're pouring hot molten metal and just all kinds of different areas of the plant, and then stitched together a time-lapse movie for their website. And I did that some years ago, but I've done it. But when I got, when I pretty much sold off most of the photography stuff and kind of got out of it, I made up my mind that I wasn't really planning on going back into any photography related. I'm doing this little construction stuff kind of on the side. It's a little bit labor intensive. However, I enjoy it. And I don't have to work, you know, 20 hours a day. I usually work about 5 hours a day and making some extra money. And most importantly, staying out of my wife's hair. D7J Mobile.
Well, that's good. Stay out of her hair. That keeps you busy and keeps you, you know, off the street, so to say. Anyway, it just ran through my mind. I thought, well, who do I know that's into photography? And your name came up in my head really quick. There's also if you're not taking pictures of it, but it's also making 3D models of the land, the surface of the land. Like they want to know before they're going to build something, they want to know what does the surface of the earth look like right here over an area. And you might go out and do three or four of those things where you just And you, what you do is you set up an airplane that's got a camera in it. So you, all, your old camera equipment wouldn't have worked anyway, because you got to have lightweight camera equipment that does really high resolution. It's got to be mounted on a gimbal that's no vibration from the airplane and all that kind of stuff. So it, there is some pre-work into it, getting it set up for it. But then you, you mow the grass, is what they call it, in the sky. You set up points, waypoints in the sky at different altitudes. And then you just hit the launch button, and it launches the plane, and the plane goes and mows the grass. It goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, one way, taking pictures. And they're not pictures that you see in the light that our eyeballs look at. They're a different wavelength. They're doing 3D mapping of the Earth. And then you go crisscross. You go the other way, and you do go mow the grass in the 90-degree opposite direction. And then you compile all that into a 3D model. And that's what they're, that's what the construction sites are looking at. And then they want you to do three or four of those. And then they compare the ones, which one's going to be best for our needs coming up. And that's just an example. I saw them doing something similar to that on that Gold Rush program. They're doing the same thing to find out where the valley is, where the gold would have settled, where the catch points are. And you can look at it and think you see something, but then you can actually measure it with these tools and know what you're seeing. Anyway, it's something to think about when you're going into retirement. W4DJW.
Interesting aspect. And again, you know, if you find enjoyment out of it, and on top of it, you can make yourself a few bucks over and above it. I mean, why not? That's kind of the way I look at it. So, well, Dave, listen, I just pulled into Ingalls parking lot here. It's raining. I want to run in and grab what I need and get out. And I'm going to go home, and I'm going to start my smoker up today, and I'm going to smoke a pork butt roast for some pulled pork tonight. And I'm going to make some baked beans as well. Good talking to you. Good hearing from you. Have a great New Year's, and I'm sure I'll talk to you again soon. W4DJW, SD7J.
Okay, Mom. Happy New Year to you. Good hearing you on the radio. You're the first contact I had in 2021. Anyway, good talking to you. Enjoy the first day of hope. What's hopefully to be a better year. ND7J, W4DJW, clear.
Be much worse, can it, Dave? All right, you have a good one. I am QRT, ND7J.
Jim, buddy. 4DJW, KB4NC.
KB4NC, W4DJW. I didn't know that. I heard somebody in there, Gabriel, but I didn't know who it was. How are you doing?
I'm just playing a little bit in HF, but I hear you guys talking about the Bob is going to fire up the smoker again. That's good. Happy New Year's Eve. Well, Happy New Year, actually. It's not Eve. It's almost 10 o'clock. So, Happy New Year. Hope you got a good Christmas. And, yeah, we need a better year, buddy. At least not as bad as it was last one.
And unfortunately, the virus doesn't know that the last year ended and a new one began, and it's still on its peak, or still going up, climbing on its peak. That's what I told my wife a few minutes ago, that we got to be careful, because they were saying that the hospital care right now, because it's so high, is you can't go in and expect the same kind of attention that you would have gotten when it wasn't peaking. We've been staying home a lot, just going out. Only when necessary. Every once in a while, I might go out, you know, like to get some restaurant food when it wasn't really necessary. But that's just because you get to the end of your rope and you got to do something different. But anyway, Happy New Year to you too, Gabriel. I'm hoping we hit a peak here again, hit our second peak and start the decline, start coming down the other side. But I'm not seeing it or hearing it yet.
It was never a second peak. I guess we never left the first one in the first place. A lot of people, they don't get it. They think all those precautions, it wasn't necessary, and here we are. But anyways, we never learn, and we have to deal with what he got. It's bad. It's pretty bad. Order in Atlanta, man, is bad too. Really bad, but... we'll see. We will see what this new year brings.
Well, you're absolutely right there. There are a lot of different variations in opinions. I know I've got cousins that think there's nothing to this. This doesn't exist. It's all made up. It's a conspiracy. The only good thing about that, well, it's not really a good thing about that, but the thing about that is that's somewhat self-correcting. It's like Darwinism, right? Survival to the fittest. And if you can't think that one through, well, there are those that said that it is nothing and they are no longer breathing, right? So that kind of self-corrects that issue over time. But it's sad. It's still sad. Even I've got relatives that are just like, I've got an uncle that is adamant about it not being real. But I saw a Facebook post where some of the healthcare workers said, if you don't think it's real, come on down here and we'll put you to work cleaning up after this. And you'll learn how real it really is real fast. KV4NC, W4DJW.
That's one of the problems too, that here in the States, people don't deal with things in another countries, deal every day, like Ebola, SARS, swine flu, bird flu, and all that kind of thing. That's one of the main reasons people still is in disbelief, you know, because until a certain point, the American medical system is still one of the best, you know. But when you got a problem with an infection disease on that level, and you see it firsthand, I mean, I see what Ebola can do, and even measles, things like that, you know, Central America, South America, even parts of Europe, and Asia, you see that, and they are not very strange to all this, but still people don't believe it until they start to feel on their skin what is what, and trust me, it's really surprising. But well, you got that right. It's Darwinism. His best, he will survive the fittest. Still, despite it's got a low mortality rate. I mean, the problem is people contribute a lot of that.
Yeah, you got to keep that peak down as much as possible. Well, you know, leave room for the healthcare workers to do their job. Don't overwhelm them, or it will get worse. I was watching a YouTube video on a doctor that said that they pretty much can now determine who's going to make it and who isn't to a very large degree. And like you said, the percentage of people that actually die from it is really, really low, especially when you consider the total quantity of people that actually report that they have it when they have it. Because a lot of people just suffer through it, and they don't want to go make it worse, right? So they, like I heard a guy on here talking the other day saying 40 people and where he was got it. He knew he got it. He didn't go get tested for it. There's no need. He knew he had it, but he got over it over time. So a lot of those people don't even get reported. So that would even bring the number down if they reported it. So the quantity of people gets smaller and smaller, the percentage that die. But the doctor was saying that there's this shock that you can go, a corona storm that you can get into. And they've got like 40 or 50 different metrics that they take measurements on your blood and all kinds of different things in your body. And if you meet all this criteria, you're going to be one of those people. That's a quarter of a percent of 1%, which is a very low quantity. And they know, and they're doing everything they can for those people as early as they can for those people to try to get out in front of it. But most of those people don't make it. And that is one of the things you could ask them if you do happen to land in there is, do I fit the criteria for that storm? And if you fit the criteria for that storm, then you've got something to worry about.
Well, yeah, it's hard, man. I know quite a few people, they have it. We have it early in the year, actually, when nobody knows what it was, but they sent us the results from the laboratory, and it was confirmed that it was COVID. What we used to have, I mean, Angela, Christopher, and I, last year, around this time of the year, man, Angela was on ventilator for a few days, Christopher too. Oliver was bad, but not as us. Veronica was a little bit like a flu kind. And I still remember when I was in the hospital, when Angela was on the ventilator, and I asked him, I said, what is it? And they tell me, it's a flu. I said, well, what strain of flu? And they look at me like, what do you mean, what strain? I said, every known flu in the world has got a strain. It's got a code on it. But just for the fact that this thing, it doesn't feel the same. And it kicked me for like 2 months, very bad. I mean, but I remember the really, really, really body slamming was 2 weeks. I never forget that. The rest, for at least 2 months, man, the coughing, the tiredness. I mean, I was tired for everything, the weakness, and I get out of that. But I treat myself the always I do, because I always got cold, or the flu gets me every year. If it's not in summer, which I hate, is in winter. So I thought it was the same. They tell me, say, we don't know. It's just a flu, but we have no idea what it is. But it is a flu. So that thing was still running in my head. And finally, they sent us a test and everything. They compared, and yeah, there was COVID.
Well, that's interesting, because I was also listening to a woman in France. She's speaking in French, but she was telling how how it affected her. And a lot of it is the same, what you said, it was affected you. But she said, effectively, for her, you can write off 3/4 of a month of your life, right? You're going to lose in 3 out of 4 weeks. And like you said, it went on further than that. But the really dark part of it, the really hard to get through, to plow through part of it, was 3 of 4 weeks, right? You know, with a half a week on each end of that, 3 weeks going into and coming out of. But once you get into that 3 weeks, you're just out of it. You're just totally, you're just barely hanging on. It's what the way she put it. She described it. Not something I want to go through anytime soon. So, and all it takes is, like I saw another one prior to that, my wife was telling me about that one, where a husband and wife were doing really good. They were in their late 60s, early 70s, and they were staying home. They were doing everything. But after a while, one of the two of them had to get a haircut, and one of their daughters was a hairstylist, and she had self-isolated for only 3 days, so she didn't know that she had it, but she did. But she did a test, and it came up negative, so she went and gave one of them, the two, a haircut, and that gave it to them. Shortly after that, one of the two, the husband or wife, I think the wife passed away, but the husband was so sick that he didn't know that she passed away, and then 10 days later, he passed away. So something as simple as that, getting a haircut, you got to be careful.
Yeah, I mean, but we came again to the same fact that why you need a haircut when you're in your house. I mean, it's just plain and simple as that. Oh, yeah, we're going to open the lake, and everybody goes to the lake. And all those bunch of, and I'm sorry for the war, man, but they're a bunch of idiots in the horror house. Because I see it every time I came from Atlanta, man. It was packed with people. I mean, it's just common sense. You don't want to die. Just don't walk into the fire. But like I tell you, I mean, the problem is the American society in general. They never experienced this. I mean, we do. I see it firsthand, and it's horrible, man. It's horrible. But again, it was unprepared. And I guess it was a bunch of factors. I don't want to get into the specifics, you know. and I guess everybody is to blame. You cannot blame nor the president, nor the government, or the local government, or the health care providers, but people. I mean, people itself has got, it is a problem. You know what, you have to use the common sense, you like it or not. I know as humans, we don't like to follow orders. We're not good at it. I'm not good at it, but still, I mean, when I see something like that, I have to put in perspective my life and the life of my kids and my family first. So, you know, it's, and it's just the way it is. You don't like it. My kids don't like it. But I remember when this was full blown, pretty quick. I mean, my kids, Ryan, was crying because we don't let him go to the park. We leave him in front of the park. We got the park just next door, and there was a lot of people playing there and this and that. And I was like, "Hey, I don't want you to die." He was, "But all my friends are there." I said, "Well." So when the video conference started 2 weeks after that incident, one of his classmates passed away. And he was in the park. His mom passed away too. So that tells you something. They don't understand. I mean, but we do. But if I was like, you know, most people say, "Oh no, yeah, you can go. I mean, you can, you know, go and blow some steam over there." And I was like, "Nope. I'm sorry. It's going to be a rough year, but that's my work. Keep you guys alive. I mean, at all costs. Even if you guys don't like it right now, but you will understand." And he understand when he knew what happened, and he was like, "He was my friend, and this and that," and he was there in the park saying, "What if it was you?" He was just looking at me without an answer, and I was like, "That's your answer. That's why I won't let you go." Back to you. It's KB4NC.
Well, there you go. All right. He understands now, hopefully. Right now he sees it firsthand, but it's really sad that had to happen, that he lost a friend like that. I know my wife has lost several that worked on the same floor that she worked, some that worked right outside of her office. They were older gentlemen that she worked with, but she knew them well. And one of them had just recovered from cancer, right? And he'd only been recovered from cancer for about a year. But he was, you know, they said, "You're cancer-free now," about a year ago. And then he got this, and now he's gone. I heard that on that TV show, Gilligan's Island, the Marianne, one of the actors, she was like close to 90, and she passed away from it yesterday, I believe it was. Yesterday she got it, and everybody, well, when I grew up, when I was getting home from school, in elementary school and junior high school, that's one of the things I used to do is go home, watch Gilligan's Island, and do my homework, and she was one of the actors on that show that was so very popular. I'm not sure if you ever saw that one, but it's sad that it is the way that it is. And yes, I think that one of the other things I saw is the Spanish flu was the last one that really was this big, that really, you know, went as far as this one is going, which was in late 1800s, early 1900s. And there's nobody left alive that has been through that, right? So this is new for everybody on the planet, right? This, I mean, we got history of it. We've learned from what other people learned from it. So we're probably doing a whole lot better than they did at it, but still. We have better transportation, so it can spread quicker now than it could back then. Pluses and minuses on both sides. W4DJW.
So that's one of the reasons. I mean, and I was talking about with Juan and the guys the other day in 40 meters about it, and I tell them, if you got a map of the world, which most of us have in front of us or on the side, blah, 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 but I tell them, Windows 95, you know, and Windows 98 pretty much, even with the, you know, Mac platforms, make this world so small. It's not big anymore. I mean, whatever happens in the other side of the world, it really, really, really take a toll on us. It can affect us in a bunch of ways people still don't realize, because the world gets so globalized, so intercommunicated. The planes, they always been, you know, carrier diseases, same as boats. That's how the Spanish flu start. So, and you cannot point the finger at somebody. Oh, what China? Oh, what's Korea? Oh, what's Russia? What's, no, it's us. We come again. I mean, we have to pay the price for this kind of globalization. And we didn't learn. That's part of the human trait, you know. It happens to Napoleon. It happens to Hitler because people just don't read, don't study, don't want to learn. And that's one of the main reasons why we got this problem right now. So, that's the world in we live, and we have to deal with it. We have to learn from this mistake, you know, at the personal level, at the government level, which they're never going to learn. But, you know, get the best of us out of it, because this thing will happen in a couple more years because of that same problem, the trade problem. I mean, the globalization, the infinite traveling, this and that and blah, blah, blah. So this is the new reality in which we're going to have to deal with it every day. From now on, I mean, we saw it now firsthand, what can happen if we are not careful about it. But that's the way it is, buddy.
Well, this is true. I couldn't agree with you more. It is a global problem. It's not a problem for the U.S. or a problem for China or a problem for any other country. It's a global problem. I'm always intrigued by where we decide to draw borders, arbitrarily draw borders. We draw borders at your front yard, at your backyard, at the borders of your neighborhood, right, in the county that you live in, the state that you live in the country that you live in, on the planet that you live in, right? Once we start occupying the moon and Mars, is it going to be the moon against Mars, against the Earth, right? Once we get out among the asteroids and we start mining the ore out of the asteroids, is it going to be asteroid A against asteroid B? Eventually, humans got to get past that.
Yeah, but like I tell you, I mean, as civilization, we still don't learn. We don't want to learn. We don't want to get teach. We don't want to get, you know, guide in such a way because things you don't understand, you're afraid of, and you don't want to learn. It's just that simple. But that's what it is, buddy. All right. Here the pack is getting up, so unfortunately, when I'm home, I'm cook. So, let me make the breakfast for these guys because they're going to get hungry in very few minutes. So let me fire up the grill and see what I'm going to do. And I'm talking to you, Dave. I hope, I put a vertical, finally, on top of the tower. So I'm going to be more often. Here, I got the radio in the car, but I didn't have nothing in the house. But I'm going to start stopping more often around the repeaters, see what this thing can do. Anyway, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and I hope you and your family got a Christmas, a good new year. For me, it's just another day in the calendar, but, you know, people make a whole deal of this. But I guess this year we have to take this thing a little bit more conscious, and I hope for better. We hope for better, and keep working towards get this thing out of the way and learn from that and move on. So, Andres, I hope I'll talk to you later on. This is KB4NC.
All right, Gabriel, good talking to you in 2021. get those kids fed, get their bellies full, get them happy. And it's good talking to you. And I do hope to hear more from you on the radio. I hope to be doing more on the radio, too, in 2021 and less work. All right, trying to back away from the work that I do now, getting prepared for retirement and doing something that I like more than doing something for the other guy. But anyway, good talking to you. Hope to hear you around more. Happy New Year, KV4NC, W4DJ, WClear.
KW, W4KA.
Well, good morning, David. I haven't heard you in a long, long time. How are you doing?
Pretty good, I guess. I just heard you in there and I knew we hadn't chatted in quite some time. Thought I'd just drop in, say hello, wish you Happy New Year. We're trudging along okay over here. Had a sort of a sad Christmas, but that was to be expected.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about and exactly how that feels. That hurts. That hurts really bad. I was thinking about you. But I'm glad to know that you're back on the radio, and it's tough, and it goes on. Right? It's not something it's something you learn to live with. It's not something you'll ever get over. But anyway, good to hear you on here. Have you been able to do any ham radio and any DXing?
I've done, well, not much. I do about maybe three a month. Three DX stations on there. It's just cherry picking, really. But I'm going to try to do a little better this year. And we painted inside the house. That kind of got our minds in a different area. Well, I painted all the inside, like two rooms left. I got everything painted but two small rooms. And it looks good. And that was a big help, just finding something to do, you know. But, yeah, I want to get back on the radio. I miss it, and I don't need to chase nothing anymore. I've got about everything. All I need is Spratly, Scarborough Reef, and North Korea, and I'm done. I've got everything then. I don't suspect I'll ever get North Korea. I don't know if I'll live long enough for the North Koreans to revolt, kick that guy out.
W4DJW, well, I know what you're talking about. My antennas, you know, my super loop broke about 2 years ago, and I fixed it. I took it down, brought it in, fixed it, and it's laying over in the corner of my ham shack, and it's been there ever since. Well, about 6 to 9 months ago, the mystery antenna, it just came loose. I didn't put any of that rubber tape around the jumper connector. And the jumper connector just came unscrewed. That's pretty wild. I've never had that happen before, but it's been up there a few years. So then a big storm came by and got it all tangled up in a tree. So over the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've been out there fishing it out of the trees. And I got it out and got it back up there, came in the house to see if it worked, listened around the bands. I think it was 40 meters. I think it was either early in the morning or late in the evening, not nighttime. And found Belgium on there, calling CQ, and went back to him. He came back to me the first call. All I had was 20 watts going out. So that was pretty good. That tells me it's working. If I can get from here to Belgium and on 20 watts, I'm back in business on HF. But I got to get that super loop up too. Just one antenna is not enough. Got to have at least two.
And my super loop's laying on the ground right now. I haven't had anybody to come over and shoot a line over a tree for me. They were going to come, and something come up. I forget what happened, but anyway, it's laying on the ground. But I've got the beam 10 through 20, you know, I've got that, 6 to 20, actually. And I've got a 40-meter beam up, so it does okay. And actually, I can actually work 80 meters on that 40-meter beam, believe it or not. I can tune it. It works halfway decent, especially for just rag-chewing around the area. It does fine. And I have worked DX before on it. But it don't hurt it to work it on 80 because it's just plain metal, so nothing to really break there. This is W4K.
Well, I wondered, once I got mine up again, I did listen in the early morning. I put it in scan mode to go up and down 80 to see if Jack's front porch was running. But I couldn't find Jack's front porch at all.
56, and yeah, they generally always are running. A lot of times even up into noon, and then again in the afternoon. Jack had some health problems. I don't know if he still gets in there like he used to. And I had I had two stents put in the heart in November. It was strange. I know you remember back when I had some stents put in a few years back. Well, those stents clogged. They had to stent a stent. It was crazy. One was 80%, the other was 100%. And the 100% one would have killed me. But my heart made two little bitty arteries and fed the blockage. Your heart will make arteries, believe it or not. Mine made two little bitty ones. They wasn't good enough, but they got to stand there and got it open. But I found that amazing. He showed me the picture of the little artery that my heart makes. Your heart will make an artery in some cases for you.
Well, that is really interesting. I didn't know that. So the one that got 100% blocked, did he, like, take it out and put a new one in his place? Or does he have a plan for this one not doing the same?
He just went in there and opened up that stent and put a stent within a stent. And he told me, he says, they can stent within a stent within a stent within. They can put multiple stents within stents. And so that, I don't know why they block, but I got the newest type stent this time, so hopefully they won't block again. But I got some other blockages in there. I've got 340s and 150, which when that 50 goes to 51, they'll stand it, I guess. But it's just, I don't know. I guess it's probably the way I eat. I eat fatty foods, I guess, David, but the good Lord's been on my side. He's taking care of me. That 100%er could have got me, but it was strange how I found out. Let me recycle. I'm going to tell you how I found out about the blockage. It pulled a muscle. I had lifted something wrong getting out of the car with groceries, 40 bottles of water, and I picked it up wrong, and it strained the muscle across my heart, or in the chest there. And it was a bad strain, and it hurt, and it made me think I was having a heart attack. And I thought, well, golly, this is some kind of pain I felt when I had the heart attack. So I made an appointment with the heart doctor. And, well, at first I went to see my doctor, and he said, you pulled a muscle. He says, that's what it is. You pulled a muscle. And I said, okay. Well, I went ahead and made an appointment with the heart doctor just to be on the safe side, because it troubled me so much, it laying down at night. And when I went to the heart doctor, he put me on a stress test, and as soon as I took that stress test, I failed it. And that's how they found the blockages. Had I not pulled that muscle, I might not be here.
Well, that's a good thing you went and saw him and didn't just not do anything about it, which is probably what I would have done, which I've got to get out of the habit doing that. I don't ever go to the doctor, hardly for anything. It's got to be something that hurts for days on end before I go. That's something I'm thinking I'm going to have to change, but I've only been to the doctor twice, once for something that got in my eye and once for a sinus infection. I went three times. One time when I fell down on the marble floor at the airport and I broke some ligaments loose. Other than that, I've stayed away from hospitals and doctors as much as possible. But I'm glad you got that figured out. You know what's going on there. That's gonna extend your life by a lot, I'm sure.
When they get in there and they open those stents, you begin to feel better immediately. It's an immediate response. And they didn't even keep me overnight in the hospital. He let me go home after he put those stents in. And I was no worse for wear. And I got those other blockages kind of waiting in the wings, but they've been there a while, so they were there years ago, and they still hadn't closed up yet. But I don't know what made them two stents close up. One of them closed up in the middle of the stent, and he had a job getting that thing open. You kind of semi-awake in there when they're doing it. And, boy, he was banging that thing. And he got a little old pick that he hits that blockage with, and he banged him. He worked on it about 45 minutes trying to get it open. It was almost to the point that he was going to have to stop and do open heart. And he finally got it open and got that stent in. I was so grateful. and the other one was blocked at the frontal stand. It was 80%. That, and any time it's less than 100, and they can get that little old wire in there, it's no problem. They can expand it. But it amazed me that they can stent a stent. This floored me, and he said they can do it multiple times. So it's really good. But other than that, health pretty good. They watch my prostate pretty close. I'm on some kind of drug for it, but the I still not in the danger zone according to the doctor yet. But gotta keep an eye on that.
Well, that's good. You're keeping tabs on it. I'm gonna have to learn how to do the same thing eventually. I don't know when. I guess I'm just putting it off as long as possible. Kind of like retirement, but now I got a new boss I don't like at work, so I'm doing some investigating. What's it going to take to retire? That's what I'm looking forward to next. And then once I'm retired, what can I do to earn more while I'm in retirement and have fun while I'm doing it, like flying airplanes, programming, using computer programs, writing programs, and programming airplanes, that kind of thing. So this brainstorming got me thinking about it. Whereas before, it's just always been heads down, work. I'm trying to break away from that, and get prepared for being able to talk on the radio more, right? Not being talking on a bridge all the time. W4DJW.
JA, yeah. Yeah, well, I know your work ethic's strong, right? I've known that about you all your life. And you're overdue for retirement, that's for sure. Well, just plan out what you think you'll need, and I guess the saying goes you can't ever have too much, maybe. But you get it in the right places, and you'll be okay. Well, I've enjoyed my retirement. I retired at 60. One thing that made me retire was two of my friends that had retired at 65 that I worked with. Both of them died within the year. One died of stomach cancer. The other one died of lung cancer, I think it was. But anyway, they both died and didn't even get a vacation in on their retirement. They were going to travel. Neither one of them got away from their home. They both died. That got me to thinking. And I thought, you know, it ain't worth it to sit here and try to build up a 401k and think you're going to live forever. You never know. And I just went to my boss and said, look, I want to go. See if you can find me a year's pay, and I'll go. And there was a guy in Atlanta in tech support. They wanted to keep him. He was real good. But he was on the chopping block, and they were going to give him a year's pay and put him out of pasture. And I swapped with him. He took my place, and I took his. And I'm glad I did. No regrets. So, because I'm 77 now, and that's 17 years ago. So I think I made a pretty decent move that time.
Well, I think if I do as good as you, I'll be doing good. 17 years in retirement. I never planned to make it that many. I'd be grateful if I did. But I'm 64 now, and I become eligible for retirement on the 1st of February, and then my normal retirement would be November of the following year, 2022, November 2022. But I become eligible on the 1st. And I just don't like this guy I'm working for at all. And I'm thinking, what's the best thing I could do here? Retire. And then I think what I read is also that before you're 66, if you go ahead and retire before your normal retirement, then anything you make above a certain threshold, one of $2 comes off, half of it goes, you don't get in your retirement anymore, in your Social Security retirement, until you turn 66. And then when you turn 66, you can make as much as you want to. So maybe it'll take me that long before I start making any money. Anyway, I could get downstairs. I've been up here for a while. I could get down there and make sure I'm supporting being together with Amy on New Year's Day. I've been up in the office for a while. Need to get back down there. Can't stay away too long. But anyway, it's good hearing from you. Tell Sandra hello, and get back on the radio. It's going to miss you. Miss not hearing you. W4KA, W4DJW.
Okay, my radio cut off 3 times during your transmission. I don't know if it's a repeater or my radio, but anyway, good to hear you, David. Always good to hear you. Tell your wife hello for me and pet the dog. And I'll talk to you later. It's W4KA. I'll be clear, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, W4DJW Clear.